Hello and welcome to the Florida Institute of Certified Public Accountants podcast with Justin Thames, Director of Governmental Affairs for the FICPA. He is our profession's voice of advocacy with the Florida Legislature. And now it's time to hear from your host, Justin Thames.
Welcome to the Florida CPA Today podcast. Our guest today is State Representative Mike Caruso. Representative Caruso is one of three CPA lawmakers currently serving in the Florida Legislature and is also a member of the FICPA. He represents House District 89, which covers Florida's coastline from Palm Beach Shores down to Boca Raton. Welcome to the podcast, Representative. We're happy to have you with us today.
Thank you, Justin. I'm happy to be here. Beautiful day here we're having in Tallahassee. Let's talk FICPA stuff.
Absolutely, sir. Well, before we start talking about that, I want to have you tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, I'm a CPA, and this is my first term in the state legislature, and I represent District 89, which runs from Boca Raton to Singer Island. It's mostly the intercoastal and coastline communities. There's 14 cities in my district, and I'm honored and proud to serve them. Family-wise, I've married, I've got seven children, and live in Delray Beach, and with my wife and a couple little puppies that you've probably seen me walking in the park out here in Tallahassee. And excited to be here. I'm a forensic CPA by trade. I've been doing that for about 20 years now. And although I do the typical CPA practice of taxes and accounting, I find the forensic field to be very exciting. So I've been focused on that for many, many years.
So I know we've talked a little bit about House District 89, but tell us a little bit about kind of your constituents, you know, kind of what's the makeup of the district from a demographic standpoint and some of the issues that you hear from your local citizens that they care about.
Great question, Justin. My District 89 is a lot of people would say that the poorest of the people there are millionaires and the richest are multi-billionaires, as you can imagine in the Palm Beaches. But we've got our areas where there are many poor and underserved individuals that we still need to give attention to. And so, you know, it's important that we focus on the needs of all of our constituents in the district. So that's what I try to do here in Tallahassee. And it's from a demographics perspective, mostly older. I'd say the average age is about 60. And as split party-wise, it's much more like a third Republican, a third Democrat, and a third no party affiliation, so NPAs. So it's pretty equal in there, which means a tight race for anybody running in that district. I won by 32 votes. Out of almost 100,000 votes casted, and when you win by 32, it creates some excitement in the area. So when it's election time coming up in November, we will be working hard to try to expand that win margin.
Yeah, your district really kind of embodies the state as a whole. You know, most of the statewide demographics play out exactly like your district's a third, a third, a third. So I know you had a very tight race, a tough race, and I know that the re-election is going to be coming up. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that at the end of our podcast today.
Sure.
So this is your second session here in Tallahassee as a legislator. How would you say, you know, being a CPA has helped you as an elected official so far?
Oh, wow. It's been a tremendous aid to my position here as a legislator. It gives me insight that I don't think anybody else has. I serve on Ways and Means Committee, and we deal with taxes there, and I'm one of the few on the panel that probably understands at a high level what the intricacies of the taxes are, and a lot of my fellow classmates and other representatives, members, they come to me for advice or for trying to get answers to what bills are really about. So it's been a big help from an investigative perspective. As a forensic, I'm able to dive into the numbers that a lot of people shy away from. And I was talking to one legislator the other day, and he's running a bill, and And he says he was glad that it went through the House floor without any questions to him, because he really didn't understand the math. And I said, you know, you should have come to me. I would have explained it to you. It's pretty easy, you know. But it's just some of the, you know, as a CPA, I know the numbers, and it makes a big difference when you're dealing. That's what we do up here. We deal with a lot of money issues, and taxes, and $90 billion budget. So, you know, we have to be on top of our game. So I think being a CPA is a big asset.
Yeah, in particular, you know, I've had the opportunity to, you know, kind of be in some of those committee meetings, especially Ways and Means. You know, we're pretty much always there. We've got a tax package that's coming up. We've talked to our members a little bit about the tax package. It's going to be a wide berth of tax cuts that everybody's going to be able to hopefully benefit from. A wide range of issues, particularly the CST tax, is going to be reduced pretty substantially, and yeah. I think that's going to be one of the big highlights of the tax package this year.
It absolutely is. There's a lot of things in there, like the commercial real estate rental tax going down by, unfortunately, only 0.1, but 0.1 is a lot of results in a lot of tax savings, so 0.1%. So
they keep chipping away at that.
I think it's after this year, it's going to be down to 5.4%. Of course, many of the counties have the surtax at 1%. They add on to that, so it'll, in total, it'll be 6.4%. I actually had a bill, a sales tax exemption bill for commercial real estate rental, and it was designed to exempt all sales tax on commercial real estate leases for companies that had 9 or fewer employees. So we were really focused on the small businesses in the state of Florida, the Florida being the only state in the country that has a commercial real estate rental tax. And I was hoping to do it, but it had a $160 million impact. I don't think leadership was ready to take on that big hit to their budget. So they're kind of tight with the money. The governor, you know, he's kind of mandated that we come along and we fund teacher salaries, and which is a great thing. Teachers need it, you know, deserve a raise. So we're going to be spending nearly $1 billion to get those pay increases and for the teachers. So we want to make sure that there's enough money in the budget to cover that. So my bill didn't get through, but we'll try again next year.
Well, and if the legislature, you know, would, not to get too off topic, but if they kind of move the needle a little bit on the remote sales collection of the use tax.
The internet
sales tax with the Wayfair decision. I think that eventually we may get there, but the legislature hasn't really warmed up, at least on the House side, hasn't warmed up to implementing the marketplace or the collection of that remote sales.
So true. I think the public would see a internet sales tax as a new tax. Although you and I know, as CPAs know, that there's already an existing tax called everybody thinks it's sales tax, but it's a sales and use tax. Many of Floridians don't realize there's a use tax and that they're required to pay the sales tax into the state based on their use of products purchased out of the state. And you know, I don't think leadership was ready to attack that. Maybe next year under Speaker Sprouse, we'll be able to address that and get about $800 million of revenues into the city into the state, which are so desperately needed to cover things like teachers' pay increases and environmental issues and healthcare issues. So.
Well, and I know that issue is going to be kind of ongoing, and I think as the rest of the country has pretty much adopted some type of collection process, I think it's just a matter of time. But let's move on to some of your other committees that you're on.
Sure.
Because you actually serve on 6 different committees in the House, and they kind of vary from policy areas. You've had a lot of exposure from different areas of policy. A lot of times legislators get kind of pigeonholed into one area or another, but I mean, you've got a little bit of transportation, you've got Ways and Means, you've got some health care. And I know your all-time favorite, the Joint Legislative Audit Committee.
I feel right at home in the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. We're talking about audits. We're looking at financial statements. We're looking at, we're hearing about, you know, cities' deficits and things like that. And I feel right at home there. But I love my other committees that I'm involved in. And I'm blessed and fortunate to be put in such some great committees like Ways and Means and Transportation, Energy, and it's just a real blessing that I get to participate in those different different committees.
So now we're in the last little bit of session. We've only got a little bit of time left. You and I were talking earlier before we got on the podcast that, you know, some people, you're either feeling really good about the last couple of weeks or you're starting to sweat a little bit because, as we say in the process, things are dying. Bills are dying left and right.
That is so true.
I think you mentioned that you're in pretty good shape and you've got some things that are still on the board. And why don't you tell us a little bit about some of your priorities this year and some of the bills that you're working on?
Well, yeah, I don't want to jinx anything. I'm feeling good right now. You know, last year I passed three bills on the House floor, and two of them made it in the law. So as a rookie, that's huge. I also brought home about $42 million of appropriations. Which a lot of people don't know, but we have to run a bill for each appropriation. So each bill one gets worked through the whole process. So
$42 million isn't nothing.
$42 million is a big deal. Your typical representative member here in the House is going to get about $500,000 if they're lucky, and if they're part of the right party. I got $42.5 million. So
as a freshman.
And I'm pushing towards the same amount this year. I'm different appropriations, and some are the same, but there's a lot of new ones in there. So I'm working hard to get those all through. Great causes too, like, you know, Alzheimer's facilities and daycare facilities, things that they're so desperately needing of funding and things like that. So looking forward to that, working those through the budget process. And then from a policy perspective, you know, we get six slots, Justin, and I filled all my six slots, filed six bills, and those were a substance abuse bill, a trust bill, nonprofit hospital tax exemption bill, you know, municipal utility bill that really stirred the waters there for a little while. And I've also got had a delivery driver bill, which was also made the news and stirred the pot, and then the sales tax exemption bill. So those were my six, and I also co-sponsored, or as Chair Drake would say, I co-primed those a couple bills, and those were Holocaust education and a pedestrian walkway bill. And then just recently, I filed an amendment onto the transportation bill, HB 395, to get another piece of policy through on that transportation bill. So yeah. You know, you get creative and you try to work ways to get your policy that you want through. And so you do it by prime co-sponsoring or amending or filing your own bills. And so right now I still have six of them in play, and I'm looking forward to bringing them to the House floor. Actually, a few of them are coming this week, and then final week, hopefully we ride the rest out.
So that amendment, you and I were talking a little bit about that, and that amendment in my mind is a prime example of where a CPA in the legislative process can really take the skills that you have as a professional and apply them to the legislative process to help bring about change. Without getting too deep down in the water, just give us a high level of kind of how you ended up getting involved in that legislation.
From a drone perspective, let's see. I was sitting on transportation back in October 28th. We had a committee meeting. And the CEO, director of Florida Turnpike Enterprise, was speaking and giving a presentation. And she was talking about the new toll-by-plate system.
And then this is routine, right? To set the stage, this is a routine presentation by an agency of the state. And it happens all the time. They just come up and give kind of a quick rundown of here's what we're doing, here's where things are going on, right?
Exactly, because on committees, you got to understand there's a lot of freshmen sitting on committees, and in addition to that, there's people sitting on the committee for a first time that might be a freshman or not be a freshman, might even be a senior sitting on a committee for the first time. So in the very few first weeks of session year, we go to committee, and different organizations are affiliated with whatever committee it is, come in front of the committee and explain what's going on, what the issues are, and how they're going to be dealing with them. And so in this case, it was transportation, and so we had Florida Turnpike Enterprise coming before us to tell us what's going on in the Florida Turnpike Enterprise, SunPass, and toll by plate and cash things, and their new transponders that they've offering for free and things like that, and there's some issues. So she's given her presentation, and they're invited guests. So you want to be kind of nice to them and you know, respectful of them. And I'm sitting there thinking, wow, you know, I'm a CPA and I'm sitting there, she's talking about toll by plate. I'm thinking about the millions and millions, tens of millions of tolls transactions that occur on a daily basis, on a monthly basis, and wondering, wow, I wonder, you know, the process. You've got all these small collect receivables of a dollar 20 is the average toll. On a $1.20, you've got to, on a toll by plate, you've got to bill that out. You have to send out a paper bill to try to collect that $1.20. Or let's say you had five of them, even if it was, you know, $6.
I just paid one.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. and so if you had five tolls in the month, the FDOT has to send out a bill for $6, and then they add a surcharge to it of $2.50. So $8.50. A typical invoice to the public. Well, we know it costs 50-something cents to mail it and probably $2 to process it, and we're trying to collect $6. And then, you know, that nature of that invoice is one that's not going to get collected. So I asked the question during committee and was, you know, kind of going out there on the limb. And I said, Madam Director, I said, What are the customer receivables that are greater than 90 days in age at this point? And she said, to everybody's surprise on the committee, $120 million. That's a lot of money, you know, $120 million here, $120 million there. Pretty soon we're talking real money. So I've gone on to do some more investigative research from my forensic background. And so that has led us to HB 395. And transportation bill that Representative Andrade is going to be presenting on the floor this week on Tuesday, the amendment that I filed in order to get additional information from the Florida Department of Transportation's proviso. It's proviso language. It basically says, you provide us with this information or we don't fund you for the next year. So I'm pretty sure they're going to be getting back to us with all the information.
Add some transparency. What was the real number?
I'm not at liberty to say at this point.
It was a lot more, wasn't it?
It's more, yes.
It's a lot more.
It's significant. And like I said, pretty soon you start adding it all up, it's real money.
So as you've gone through the legislative process, has anything really surprised you as you've, you know, this? You're not a new kid on the block anymore. This is your second year up here. Has anything just kind of stood out to you and kind of surprised you about the legislative process, whether it's political or policy related?
I think that's a great question, Justin. I'd say what really surprised me is how orderly everything is. And you would think that everything, there's a process, and it's so specific in nature, the process is. And from the time bills are drafted and have to be in drafting to the time they get out of drafting and have to be filed, to the committee process they have to go through, and then onto the floor of the House, the Senate, and the governor signs them. It's so organized and detailed, but the thing that's surprising is that it's so flexible to be able to change to get something done that needs to be done at the last second. If we go back 2 years ago, we had Stoneman Douglas happen in the last 2 weeks of session, the idea that they were able to come together in the last 2 weeks, and that's when everything's
complete,
like...
Complete overhaul of the budget, right?
Yes, it's completely overwhelming what is going to take place in the next 2 weeks there. We will be working till 2 o'clock in the morning, 5, 6, 7 days a week in the House side, and the Senate too. And then to throw Stoneman Douglas and that tragedy onto the scene and be able to revise the budget, find the money, $500 million almost, at the last second with no committee process or anything, and you know, and to come up with good legislation that worked towards helping that situation and to fund the problem is amazing. So its ability to be flexible when it needs to be is my biggest takeaway.
That is also the biggest fear of lobbyists like myself, is the last 2 weeks. I always tell our team is when we get the last 2 weeks of session, we say, okay, we know that we have to be vigilant about the amendments that come through the process, because there are, you know, there's 3,000 bills that are out there, there's just as many amendments. I always tell our members, like, on an average session year, we'll see 3,000 bills and another 3,000 amendments will be filed in that process. And amendments can change a piece of legislation dramatically.
Totally flip-flop it. That's so true. You know, and we've got some other issues that's still to come in front of the House that are quite controversial, like Airbnb, E-Verify. They're going to be coming to the House floor this week. Of course, you know, we've got, we'll continue to expand healthcare. We'll continue to focus on education and the environment and with emphasis on resiliency projects. I think we've had more water projects this year request than any year ever. And those are three things that the governor has been strong on leadership on. You know, when he first took office, his first three areas of emphasis were education, the environment, and healthcare. And I think we've, over the last 2 years, I think we've done them well in that area.
Well, that's a perfect lead-in to the next question, right? It's like you're reading my notes for me.
I'm not. I don't know where we're going. So
we're talking about the governor's priorities. So, you know, you have the governor's priorities, the House priorities, and the Senate priorities. And at the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of horse trading over issues and projects and money. What do you, like, now that we're leading into the last 2 weeks, what would be your kind of take? What's going to make it over the finish line? What do you think are going to be the major policy issues that are going to get accomplished when we reach day 60?
Well, I think one of the things we're going to see is that that in education, we're going to get teacher pay raises. They're going to be significant. The governor asked for $47,500 for starting teachers. We're going to give him pretty close to that. I think in the House and the Senate side, we're talking around $47,000 of starting teacher pay raises. And that'll end up, I know in the House bill, $47,000 will be the minimum salary. So if there's teachers making $32,000, they're going to get a raise to $47,000. And then there's other teachers with experience that have been there that are making over $47,000. They're going to get raises too. So like I said, we're putting hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars towards this request by the governor, which is so desperately needed. We've been talking about it for years. And
probably the biggest increase in the last at least two decades?
At least. Absolutely, at least. Everybody thought the lottery was going to be the great hope for teachers, and it might have thrown some money at it, but that lottery money goes into general revenue. People don't understand that. And education gets budgeted as education gets, as any other emphasis, area emphasis gets funded. I just want everybody to know that all teachers are going to get a pay raise in the state of Florida. Every teacher will get a pay raise, either in the House or the Senate bill, and I'm sure the governor will be happy to sign anything that comes along that's in that arena.
I can tell you my brother-in-law, who is a teacher in a small rural community just west of here, he's very excited about the prospect of getting a nice little bump, because it's the rural communities that really, those teachers really need kind of a little help, especially, you know, over in the panhandle where I grew up. It's, you know, with the hurricane and everything else, it's going to make a big difference in his
Absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely. Yes, some of them, those teachers making $32,000, and they'll get a bump up to 47, which will, that's impactful.
That's real money.
That's a big deal. Then we've got other areas like healthcare, where we are allowing professions to expand the service they provide. You're going to see that come through, where nurses are able to do more functions, and doctors are able to have different ways of telemedicine, where they can go on the computer and with a patient and you know, examine a patient online and prescribe everything but obviously opioids. They won't be able to prescribe opioids online, but that sort of thing. And then the environment. We're going to, you know, septic to sewer is a big deal here in the Capitol, in our state. It's something we need to address, and I think you'll see legislation come through that supports that.
Yeah, I think that's part of the tax package this year.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, we're tying, for the first time, tourism dollars to clean water. And clean water has been another governor mandate that he's requested, and I think the legislature has heard him loud and clear.
So at the FICPA, you know, we follow a lot of issues and we track a lot of issues during session. You know, you and I have talked about some healthcare things in the past, and you've done a great job of helping us kind of keep an eye on things. That's the biggest, I think whenever you and I first started talking about session, that was the biggest ask that I always talk to our team and say, hey, it's almost like if you see something, say something. I think we track probably 300 bills throughout this session, and ranging from healthcare to, you know, marijuana to tax issues. And so you know about the process and I know about the process, but for our listeners on the podcast, our FICPA members, what would you tell them about the legislative process?
I'd say get involved. If I had one thing to say, we need more CPAs up here. There's a lot of people with political science backgrounds, and I'm not saying anything's wrong with that. It's a great area of study. CPAs can add so much to this legislative process that I don't think they know, and don't shy away from it. And if you're getting, if you're at your beginning of your career or at the end of your career, it's a great area to go into. Get involved in the state legislature and come up here and help us. You know, there's so many issues that they can be so involved in and could add an expertise that nobody else can. And so I would say get involved.
100%, and I echo that. We would love to see more CPAs in Tallahassee. I know it can be tough during busy season. I know that you know, Senator Gruters has a tax practice, so he's always telling me he's working late. He stays until 11 o'clock at night trying to do some returns and things like that. It's hard, but the value that CPAs can provide to the legislative process, I think you're 100% spot on.
I do the same thing as Senator Gruters. Got to practice not as many taxes as he does, but been, you know, that's what we do. We're here all day, sometimes into the evening, and then we come home and we do our taxes and our audits and all of our accounting work, and go to bed late, get up early, and do it all over again. And you know, just being able to—I think it's worth it, though. You know, to serve our communities is important. No matter what level you do it at, whether it's helping the Girl Scouts sell brownies, or being a little league coach or whatever, I think it's important that everybody in our communities gets involved at some level. And I think this is something that I'm proud and honored to be involved in.
What I think from a community standpoint, you just said something that struck me, is that our CPAs are all over the state involved in their local communities. They're on Red Cross boards, they're on United Way boards, they're the treasurers for all these not-for-profits that are in. So they have visibility in their community already, and they're already providing a lot of support for their community. They're in the best position to be able to use that experience and use that volunteer work to kind of go into the public service area.
Exactly. In fact, you mentioned United Way. It was the first charitable operation I got involved in as a professional and as a CPA. I was an executive. I was in charge of raising money from different CPA firms throughout the Washington, D.C. I think I raised $7.2 million or something, which I think the year before was $4 million, and so everybody was happy, and I was their Superman for the year. It is something. If we are, you know, you see a lot of CPAs involved in the communities, and this is just taking it to another level. So get involved.
That's right. Well, listen, we've covered a lot of ground today. You've been fantastic. Thanks for all the time that you've given us. Before we start to wrap up, is there anything either about you personally or about your legislative service that, you know, we might not have covered that you want to leave us with today?
You know, as somebody sitting at home watching TV and or going on the internet and different blogs and podcasts like this, watching it, try to understand that nothing is black and white in the legislative process. It's called politics for a reason. There's give and take. And sometimes you've got to, you know, choose your best friend or your worst enemy and go with that. And sometimes you vote on a bill that's got 9 great things in it and 1 bad thing in it. But the bill's a good bill overall, and sometimes you got to do that. And I think people home, you know, my constituents, sometimes they're kind of harsh. How could you have voted for A when there was B to Z in there that was great? And so sometimes it we're challenged that way. So I think my takeaway is to be more understanding of the legislative process, the whole political process. You know, my goal is to serve my community with good legislation, vote for bills that have a good impact on my constituents, and to bring appropriations back to my community that'll help those citizens within the community. So that's what my goal is. It's not as black and white as that, but that is what I'm always targeted on, and that's why I'm here. So be a little more understanding sometimes.
Well, Representative, thank you so much for being with us today and for supporting the FICPA. We certainly appreciate all you do for the profession and the great state of Florida. I look forward to continuing this conversation over the summer during your reelection. I know we're going to be down in your district. I know I'll be knocking on doors for you and back in District 89, so we'll look forward to seeing you then.
Thank you, Justin. I appreciate it. Especially, I'm going to hold you to that walk into the doors.
Absolutely. I'll be there with bells on.
Continue the conversation with the Florida Institute of Certified Public Accountants. Become a member and follow us on social media for today's trends and hot topics.